Virginia Gamba, thank you for granting UN News this interview and joining us in our studios. We're here to talk about Haiti under siege with gang violence. The gangs control up to 90% of Port-au-Prince in the region. They're often better armed than the Haitian police themselves. Their actions are causing a crisis that's affecting the whole country. They are largely made up of young people who are under the age of 18. Now, you're the special representative for children in armed conflict. How does your office describe, and how do you describe, what young people are living in Haiti?
I think the situation is truly untenable. If one considers the population of Haiti, a majority of which are under 18. I mean, it's a young population. It's also a young population that has been deprived from a normal life for years. Very few have had access to schooling. One of the tricks of the gangs is to inform the inhabitants in the territories they control, might be four blocks of citizens, that they better not take the children to school. They have to stay at home, because if they leave the home, they will be attacked. Or if they send children to school, they will be raped. So it's not just that there is an impact of the gang warfare on the people. It's the people are the front line of this, are in a way manipulated by the gangs themselves. It is an unusual situation. We have seen worldwide a rise in the economic dimensions of conflict through the operation of transnational criminal organizations. And we have seen a rise in banditry, particularly after COVID, when there was such an economic downfall and unemployment globally. In many conflict-affected regions, this translated into more and more young people being forced to join armed groups and gangs just to survive and bring bread home. I think in Haiti, we're seeing almost the epitome of this. So the description for me is that the young people in Haiti, is 3.6 million are under 18 years old. 1.6 million of that 3.6 are under situations of acute famine because the country is blocked, either through a wall with its neighbor, literally, or because the harbors and the airports and all the means of communication with the outside world have been taken by gangs. These gangs are extremely well equipped. Clearly there is money. Crime, like gangs, live of that. They can either extort people for their own safety and security, like was done for years and years elsewhere in the world, or they can have, it's like a pirate port, where they can allow other criminals, such as drug trafficking cartels, to utilize those facilities and move things around. So I think that there is large amounts of weapons flowing into Haiti that are used by gangs. I am utterly convinced that one of my biggest fears is that the youngest of the young in Haiti might also become victims of trafficking, particularly girls for sexual purposes. We're noticing the UN is on the ground in Haiti. I am getting good verified information of the six grave violations. This will be published in June, so we can see this trend. But the trend is escalating to an exponential level. So we're seeing all six grave violations occurring in Haiti simultaneously. Killing and maiming of children is huge. Sexual violence against girls mostly is huge, and it's growing. And it's growing. It's almost become systematic. It's really a tactic of war, but it's also a tactic of gangs, and it's also a tactic for loyalty among gangs. So we're seeing this occur. Attacks on schools and hospitals happen every day, as well as against health workers and education personnel, so much so that the schools are closed. And the threats to families not to send children to school are there all the time. So we're seeing abduction abduction for the purposes of recruitment and use, or for the purpose of sexual violence, or the purpose of trafficking, is on the increase. And of course there's denial of humanitarian assistance, because these gangs control sometimes only four blocks, but they control them. So if you are on this side or on that side, you belong in the territory of that or the other gang. So it really is a dire situation for children in Haiti.
How outraged are you by the situation? And I know you were meant to go to Haiti and your mission got canceled for security reasons. Does that leave you frustrated and feeling powerless? Do you think you have less impact that way?
No, I don't make my job. I am not indispensable for my job. None of us are. So let's be real here. I have a good team on the ground. They provide good information. We try to reinforce their capacity, and I try to be there for them if they need me or my people here in New York. We are trying to get a technical team to go there to reinforce their capacities and assist them with verification of violations. Where I am a little bit frustrated is because my mandate is not just monitor and report to the Security Council and try to seek accountability for perpetrators. A large part of my job is to convince perpetrators to change behavior to better protect children. And this is best done through dialogue and negotiation with parties to conflict. In most cases, the UN on the ground has got the ability to engage. But sometimes I am like the last stand. When they want me to raise the profile via the combatants, then that is when my presence is needed. So I am frustrated in that I think the team on the ground felt that my presence might become, a deal maker. And the security situation is such, the access situation is such, that I cannot immediately go. But at the first opportunity, I will go.
So you would like to meet with the gangs?
No, I don't want to meet with them. I have to meet with them, and I will meet with them, and I will tell them precisely what I think of them, and I will tell them what they can do to stop it, which is the one thing that I have never yet talked to, particularly young people, violent young people like these ones are, without making it and making them understand that it is in their best interests to change behavior. And I can show them what happens if they do change behavior. Because one thing that I have noted in life is that young people have got two personalities. Some of them are cowed and they follow like sheep, but many of them are leaders, are natural leaders. Sometimes these natural leaders we have worldwide, have never been told that their leadership skills can serve peace and prosperity. And I have always found the best disarmers I know and the best child protection actors I know have all been child soldiers. So I just need them to understand the gravity of what they're doing to their own children and to themselves. If I can just do that, afterwards, whether I succeed or not is totally immaterial. I have to try.
The Security Council approved in October the deployment of a multinational non-UN support mission. Have you been advising them, since they're supposed to support the security response to the gangs, and the gangs are composed very often of under 18-year-olds. Have you served a role of counsel, and how do you see a way through in the face of that kind of...
Luckily, my office is always in constant dialogue with our partners. Our partners are always DPO, DPA, UNICEF in every situation. So we have a very good core group, and there's very few things that we don't know or that we don't talk between ourselves. I think in this particular case, it is a little bit frustrating that it has taken so long to be able to implement the resolutions of October. It has taken a long time for member states to decide if they're going to be contributing countries or not. I think it's very courageous of some African countries to have forwarded the police. But the logistics of a force is something that many times will slow them down. And the more they're slow, the implementation is difficult. I think also politically the gangs are scared of this, and they have threatened with violence if these people are deployed. So there's a lot of political considerations, a lot of diplomacy that must be ongoing. I'm very grateful that the CARICOM group of the region has now started to take a hand on this. There is and are discussions of transition. There are discussions of how and when to make these forces, to provide the access to these forces and the logistics for these forces. Where we stand as CAC is for pre-deployment purposes. We really insist that anyone going to go either for law and order or for policing or for military operations should go through or should receive a dedicated module of training on how to identify the six grave violations as they go in, and also what are the best practices to take when encountering children in the course of their day-to-day duties. The idea is preventing violations is important. They run a high risk of committing violations without even realizing they're committing them. But also you have to give them tools on how they can engage in the day-to-day work to convince these gangs, and particularly the young people of these gangs, on their need to exit the road of violence. So we do have pre-deployment training packages. We also have, and I started it last year, a special course that can be accessed by anybody online on how to become, it's a crash course on child protection in these types of situations, which anybody can access at any time at their own pace. And so we have provided all of this to those that are engaging in preparing for this force.
Okay, lastly, what are your recommendations and priorities in this difficult situation, knowing also that, let's say, post or as security operations are engaged, there's going to need to be a reform, a reconciliation within the society, a reform of the youth who are involved in the violence, a way for society to make amends?
Yes, well, my vision is that whatever happens in Haiti should be long-term. It cannot just be a short-term, either humanitarian or political process. It really has to be long-term. It has to be comprehensive. There's only one way to really do that, which is with the support of the region. So where I would see a possibility would be if there was a regional action plan by the countries surrounding the affected state, that agree to sustain that effort through time. There might be different roles for different partners in the region, both for states and for civil society, to carry through a distinct line through the nexus. You cannot just stop violence. You have to help those that both were victims of violence or perpetrators of violence to reconcile, to obtain the necessary tools that they lack, like education, like skills, and like a safe space in which they can talk and recover. You cannot do that without technical assistance from bodies about how to change the laws, how to criminalize the behavior, how to ensure that law enforcement is not abusive or repressive, how to best create governance checks and balances so that there's less corruption and therefore less organized crime. It is going to be vast. It has to be comprehensive, but I do not believe it can be done by the Haitians alone. I think a regional action plan, a regional commitment to support Haiti for the next three decades at least is needed.